You know, if we do this long enough, you might be able to make a super cut of all the times that I dance in my seat just doing this.
Hi, everybody. I'm Jim.
I'm Ryan.
And this is the Concept Crucible Podcast.
How you doing, everybody? We missed you.
How you doing?
It's been 2 weeks.
It has. It's definitely not been like 5 minutes. It's probably closer to 10. Depends on how long the audio version takes to export.
Behind the scenes camera magic, go!
I should have made like a music effect there, like doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo, but it just slipped my mind.
You could probably throw it in, because the thing I'm more concerned about right now is anybody listening on audio is just like, what the hell just happened? It went quiet. I heard rushing noise.
This is our podcast about digressions. This is actually not our podcast about digressions, but we will have one. This is about the maladaptive modern life.
I like my alliterations.
Yeah, you suggested this topic, and it was a really good one.
Yeah.
The sort of the things you do that feel good, but are actually bad for you.
Yeah. And there's a lot of them in modern life. Like, I'm not just talking about, like, you know, smoking cigarettes or whatever. I'm talking about, there are things out there that we prize and cherish and whatnot, but sometimes when you think about it, it doesn't take very much for those things to all of a sudden consume a lot of your time. And we'll talk about a couple of those.
It's good, because I'm really curious, because I don't know what those things are.
I know that you've already put a rule in your life to help you avoid one of those.
Point. Yeah, so. That's true. But Icebreaker. Speaking of consequences and time and the wasting thereof, if you had a pile of consequence-free time that you were not, like you could only waste, how would you waste it?
So I know I gave one answer when we developed the show notes.
And you have two answers, because you always have two answers.
I have two answers, because I also thought of a second thing. So the first answer that I gave is, I would probably play a lot more video games.
Mm.
That tends to be something that I'll squeeze in here and there. And luckily, I'm like one of those sprinter video game players, where I play in very intense short bursts. But then, for whatever reason, I quit because I'm like, I get bored with something, or it's too challenging at the moment, so I want to take a break to refresh, or because I start to feel guilty about not doing properly constructive things.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know how my video gaming habit would change if I had a truly consequence-free time, but so I would probably guilt-free play some video games.
Nice.
But the second thing I would do is I would probably focus on, like, a maker project.
That doesn't sound like wasting. That sounds like doing stuff.
Well, kind of. It depends on what but it kind of depends on what I'm doing with it. Like, for example, last year I bought
that. Are you learning things?
Well, I'd have to. Because last year I bought that beginner's, like, introduction to electronics kit.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been just sitting there not doing anything. And a lot of times when I sit down to learn to do stuff, I guess it all depends on what you mean by consequence-free. Like, does it have to be something that is completely inane, like watching paint dry? Or does it have to be something that is only just taking away from the other things you should be doing? Because that's what this would do. This would take a lot of the time that I should be focusing on my volunteer work, or work, or personal care stuff like fitness, or doing dishes, or something like this. This would be so productive.
Given that it builds skills,
yeah,
as opposed to, say, video games, which don't build skills in the same sort of direct way.
Okay.
That does not seem like wasting time.
Okay, in that case, I revise and only have one answer. I'd probably play more video games.
I think this is the first time we've ever, like, vetoed an answer on the Icebreaker.
It's probably just because you're secretly tired of all my two answers, and you're like, no, absolutely not. You were going to have one answer to this time.
We had a pre-show, and you said what your answer was in the pre-show, and we're going to stick to that plan.
You know, if we started filming our pre-show, at least I'd have to stick with those, stick to that commitment.
Because that would work.
Yeah, I know. There'd be so many bad things.
For me, I don't have the same problem with video games. I will happily play 18 to 20 to 25 to a million hours of video games, to the point where I have a sort of semi-purposefully uncomfortable chair. Like, I can't really sit in it for longer than about 10 hours, mm-hmm. 6 hours without getting uncomfortable, so I have to get up and move around. No, I would watch all the anime. All of it. I would watch every little bit of it. I have sort of very strict rules about media consumption, and we'll talk about those when we get into the actual topic, but even then, usually if I'm watching media, I'm also doing something else. I'm playing video games, or I'm writing, or I'm working on website stuff, or mm-hmm. you know, I'm editing videos or whatever. Mm-hmm. I'm doing something else. It does not have 100% of my attention. And with anime, especially, I mean, with subtitled anime, you need it to have 100% of your attention, because I don't speak Japanese and I won't know what the hell's going on.
Yeah.
So I don't really watch TV, but I double don't watch anime, mm-hmm. which sucks because there's lots of really cool anime. But anytime I'm like, oh, I could watch some anime, I'm like, A, Jim, you have rules. And I'm like, B, all I'm going to be doing is watching that. I could totally do something else and watch something else and just do that. So I do that instead. Mm-hmm. So I haven't watched anime in years, but I really like it. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I listen to a couple of anime podcasts and things like that. And I hear about it, but I don't really watch it. I'm like a fake anime nerd. Such a fake anime nerd. It's true. But yeah, so we identified some patterns in yeah. the ways that we sort of waste time and the ways that we not just waste time, but harmfully engage in self-care. Mm-hmm. Like, the notion is that this is a thing that you do because you're like, you know, I'm going to feel better, and I just need to get through a bit of this. Mm-hmm. And it winds up being a thing where you're like, I feel actually bad afterward. Mm-hmm. And that was consumption and creation. And yeah. consumption, you got into things like binge watching.
Yeah, so I mean, with the advent of technology, we've eliminated some barriers to content that we didn't have before. So the concept of binge watching is fairly new. I mean, it depends on how you define it.
Lasts like 10 years.
Yeah, it depends on how you define it and how. I mean, like, you could say. Maybe not binge watching, but like, I could see somebody binge reading, or, you know, you could maybe binge through movies or something like that. But in terms of like television was always delivered in a particular way. It was usually just, you know, one episode at a time in Western, like North American television. By North American, I mean usually US. You know, you have 21 to 24 episodes per season. That's usually spread out over, what, like 40 weeks, give or take. Mm-hmm. It's not a full year, but there's a break at Christmas, and there's usually some sort of summer break before they start releasing new episodes, middle, late fall. But it was always controlled, and unless, I guess the closest you've ever come to like Netflix binging would be when the Law and Order was hit syndication and they just played it all day.
Yeah, like they run marathons over.
Yeah, or CSI or anything like that. So with Netflix, suddenly you open up to this new possibility of being able to watch content all the time. And usually you'll find something and you'll be really interested in it and you'll just watch content.
Well, Netflix drops seasons.
Like,
it
doesn't
drop shows. Yeah. It goes, oh, okay. Like, it facilitates this.
Yeah.
Netflix shows don't come out in you know, a show every week. They say, okay, we are done. Here is a season of television.
Yeah.
Do what you will.
Yeah. So, season 4 of Arrested Development, season 1 of Daredevil. Like, any of these original contents, yeah, it's not released time-blocked. It is, boom, here's it all at once. Do with it as you will.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, like, on one level, it seems amazing. Like, suddenly now you have essentially unrestricted access to content, and you can watch it all at once. It makes for unique viewing opportunities that before you'd have to watch it slowly over 40 weeks. Or, you know, it was always at the discretion of how it was distributed. Now you can watch an entire season in like a day and a half if you take some breaks, and you can spot patterns and you can see characters develop much quicker. It also does have the flip side. I find that character development is too quick now with when I watch it all in one go, where a character might take 6 weeks to develop something, I watch it over the course of 6 hours, right? But here's where the maladaptive part comes in, is we call it binge-watching and evoke this kind of, it basically turns it into like a proxy for some sort of mental health issue in terms of like addictions, right? Like we use this language that's encoded as addiction for a reason, that people just will put on Netflix, and Netflix is designed, or at least its settings are designed, to auto run. Mm-hmm. You get like 15 seconds to make a decision. They will occasionally, after 3 or 4 episodes, be like, hey, you still there? You still watching? Please click yes, kind of deal. But you end up just sitting there and blasting through this stuff. And whereas maybe sitting down to watch one episode because, you know, you want to relax, suddenly it is 3, 4, 5 hours later. You haven't done anything else but watched it, and you really didn't make a lot of conscious decisions or intentional decisions to keep doing it. And suddenly your time is just gone, and it's almost like you're dissociating. You just don't realize it, because normally you'd be limited. Like, I watch one show, it's done. That's it. I have to wait till next week to watch it, download it, whatever you do. When you have it on Netflix and you have 7 seasons, like I earlier in 2015 binge watched all of The West Wing before they took it off Netflix.
Like you do.
And yeah, it's just boom, suddenly 7 seasons, I go through it in some short amount of time. It's just, it's such a weird thing.
Really 7?
7 seasons for Jeez. West Wing, yeah. It was over the course of two terms of presidency.
I had it as 5 in my head. I also binge watched The West Wing a few years ago. Mm-hmm. I'm a hateful binge watcher. I have a very strict rule now that, like, as of May, I think, that I do not watch television or movies unsupervised. I need a human being there mm-hmm. to tell me when to stop. Mm-hmm. Because otherwise I will watch all of the television. I went through, I think it was season 2 of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. in a day and a half. Mm-hmm. Like I forced myself to go to bed at 6 o'clock in the morning. I had been watching them, you know, for about 8 or 10 hours at that point. And I got up 3 hours later and was like, okay, I slept. Now I can watch more television. Like I have a deep problem with it. And it is a challenge for me because it means like now I miss out on stuff. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I only ever watch TV to the point where I don't like it. Mm-hmm. Like by the time I finished that, season 2 of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., I didn't even like the show anymore. I'm like I parsed all the plots and like this is wasting my time. It's male. It's white male power fantasy. It's 7 shades of bullshit, and I don't like it. I don't like what's going on. I don't like how I feel. But I'm going to watch the last 2 episodes. And it's that kind of decision-making is a big problem for me. Mm-hmm. And it eats up my time. Even when I have that time to just, you know, mess around, it isn't the way I actually want to spend it.
Yeah.
Because I don't feel good afterward. I don't feel relaxed. I don't feel, you know, better or refreshed or anything. I just sort of look back at it and go, well, that was a thing that happened.
Now, a lot of people tend to approach binge-watching, like, you can still, they say you can still do constructive things, right? Because, I mean, consumption is largely passive.
I say that too. I lie.
Yeah. And that's the thing I push back on is, I'm so glad that there was no Netflix, or at least I didn't subscribe to Netflix when I was still a student. And I know people who are students who you throw on Netflix and, yeah, you might get a paper written over some period of time. But think of how protracted that is and how distracting it is and how hard it is to shift attention from, you know, like one mode of thought to the next. And so it's just, it's something, and I guess we should put a caveat on this one, because you and I talked about, there's a book that was recently released, Cal Newport's Deep Work, and you and I kind of debated on it. One thing that I missed as I'm reading, so now that I've read through, I'm 110 pages into it now, mm-hmm. since the last time we talked, one of the things that he says in the book that I missed in our discussion that I also want to put here is, it's maladaptive, but that's not necessarily saying that we're saying categorically binge watching is wrong. Or that everybody must work this, like in Cal Newport's book, he doesn't say, like, he says that deep work is valuable and is important, but he doesn't say at any point that everybody, regardless of your profession, should work this way.
Yeah.
He's saying, this is one that works for me, I want to share it with you, and if you want to try to apply it to your life, do it. So when we say, like, binge watching can be negative or maladaptive, we're not saying that every context of binge watching is bad. We're not saying that people who binge watch are bad. And we're not saying that binge watching should be reclassified as morally bad or whatever. But it's just the idea that you and I both experience this, that we will binge watch something and then we just feel dirty about it.
It feels so bad.
It is the
visual and auditory equivalent of eating an entire bag of potato chips.
Yeah.
I can do it, and I certainly have, and I will probably do it again, but I don't often feel well afterward. I'm like, oh, that was really yummy the whole time, and then I'm like, I should eat dinner, like real dinner.
Yeah, something with, like, nutrients.
Yeah.
Proper nutrients, not just salt. various kinds of salt. And there's one that's kind of related a little bit under the banner of consumption. And this one is mindless scrolling. And this one largely applies mostly to social media, mm-hmm. I find. You can do a little bit of mindless scrolling in traditional web-based stuff. But, I mean, with Web 2.0 and blogging and stuff like that, content's a little bit different. It's a little bit more two-way in terms of comments and whatnot. And it tends to be shorter, digestible, so it comes out with more frequency. But I'll use Facebook and Twitter as a little bit of an example. And maybe more Facebook is the idea where it gets set up as this platform that constantly refreshes with new information.
Mm-hmm.
And when you use it and scroll through it, you're getting those kind of hits of dopamine just from rediscovering new things, seeing things shared that you highly identify with, seeing things shared that you that seems contrary to everything that you are as a person, and you just find yourself scrolling through the content.
Mm-hmm.
And like sometimes you like Instagram is a perfect one of this because it's not, or at least I don't follow enough people that it curates my feed. So when I hit the end point, that is, I hit the point of which I last
you last
my
saw,
last
yeah.
my last binge, and there's no new content below that unless I start following a new person. But chronologically, I've caught up with all the new stuff since the last time I checked it. Facebook. It's a little bit different. Maybe that's just because I have like 600 friends on there. So, I mean, there's always potentially new content to discover, practically speaking.
Yeah.
But
the algorithms are a little different for Facebook, too.
Yeah.
I find that I don't do that with Twitter. Yeah. My Twitter is really sort of heavily segmented into lists.
Mm-hmm.
And I usually give myself about 2 spins of my mouse wheel before I either move on to a different list
mm-hmm.
or I don't care.
Mm-hmm.
Twitter is a river. I don't worry about all the water that mm-hmm. that goes by when I'm not dipping my toes in.
Mm-hmm.
Facebook, though, I will definitely like continue scrolling because I'm looking for that dopamine hit. My signal that I need to get off Facebook is when I start hating everyone I know.
Mm-hmm.
Just sort of abstractly, I'm just like, oh, you people all disgust me. And like, what does that thought even mean?
Yeah.
Go do something. Occupy your brain.
But yeah, you have these little bits of mindless scrolling that sometimes when you sit there and you think about it, it's just like, man, like I spend a lot of time doing this that doesn't really have any consequence. Mm-hmm. You know, you wake up in the morning and sometimes you think, I just need to get my brain going. Let me check Facebook and scroll through it, right? You think it's kind of this benign thing, but you end up sitting there for 10, 15 minutes, not really any more awake than you were when you started scrolling through it. There's a joke. So, I mean, like, I will admit, I've dabbled in the Tinders, but a friend of mine has talked about. So if he happens to be watching this, you'll know who you are. But he told me how there's this kind of underlying rule. I don't think he's ever explicitly mentioned it to any woman that he's met on Tinder. But the idea is that if they ever meet face to face, it was because he was on Tinder on the toilet. But that's like a perfect example of like mindless scrolling in places you don't think about it. How many people use their phones on the toilet? And just sit there and...
How many people admit to using their phones on the toilet is a better question.
So I would say I have stopped doing it because I read on the toilet. And I found... I found that when I brought devices into the washroom, I stopped reading as much. So I now have a no-tech rule when I'm on the toilet.
What are you going to do? Just got to get some reading done.
Yeah, totally.
See you in an hour.
If I'm going to be here for any amount of time, I can get a page or two out before I'm done. So, I don't know, you, audience, you're probably laughing and shaking your head at me.
I have never been a bathroom reader, so I never understood that.
Yeah,
I'm busy. I have things to do.
I got a bad habit from a
young age. I have affairs to manage.
I mean, I started off reading with, like, reading shampoo bottles out of the cupboard, and I eventually started bringing Calvin and Hobbes anthologies in. So that was my introduction at, like...
No, I don't even use my phone. I have affairs to manage.
Yeah, 8 or 9 years old, I'm bringing Calvin and Hobbes into the toilet. But I mean, like, yeah, so bringing it back to not my pooping habits, but everybody's pooping habits. Like, think of how many people use their phone on the toilet and just sitting there mindless scrolling. And again, like, you're not really doing anything. You're literally doing shit all. But you are scrolling through, right? And so these little opportunities, you're on the bus, you're scrolling through and whatnot.
I don't think you're fully taking seriously my favorite part of the day.
What, doing shit all?
Sure.
Fair enough. We can discuss that later on. But yeah, just think about, like, scrolling seems like such a great thing because it allows you to keep in contact with people. It gives you more exposure to ideas, whether or not you want to talk about, like, the echo chamber of, like, you're only being exposed to ideas that fit within your networks. Mm-hmm. That's another topic altogether. I've recently scaled back my use of Facebook. I took the app off my phone, so I find that I'm actually quite disconnected from current events because that was a primary medium that I would get a lot of information from. But mm-hmm. So you tend to think of these social networks as highly positive things. And you know what? We talked about this in a previous podcast. There are incredibly positive things that have come out of social networks, like life-saving things, where people's lives have been changed for the better on social media. And so we tend to think about it in this way. And then there's these doomsdayers. There we go. That's what I was looking for. Naysayers.
You got there.
We're over there. Like, yeah, there's a kind of a Luddite twinge to what they're saying about demonizing it. But when you think about it, though, like, there is a legitimate, like, time sink side to it of sitting there. And for all the good that it's doing, you're not actually doing anything, and if at the most you're doing is engaging in...
I'm pushing the like button, Ryan.
Yeah.
I'm retweeting things.
There we go, my thumbs. There we go. Boom!
From people who are wittier than me.
Yeah, and that does what? It gives them a dopamine hit, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
When you think of how many times you get a notification on your phone. That was here's a perfect example of it. One of the reasons why I took Facebook off my phone is I realized at work... I block Facebook during the day on my computer. I use Secure Time. I don't know. If I remember, I'll put the name of it in the show notes. But it essentially allows you as a Chrome extension to designate websites that you blacklist during certain hours of the day. So from 10 o'clock a.m. until 4 o'clock p.m., I have got Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, and a few other websites that get blocked. So if I try to navigate there, it'll block me. If I want to access those sites, I have to go in through incognito mode, basically.
Do you ever navigate there unconsciously?
So here's one of the reasons why I started doing this and why I took Facebook off my phone is phone vibrates, boom, I look over, I have a notification, I go to Facebook. I have to check it out. I have a notification. Somebody liked something, so I have a new friend or whatever. So you kind of, without even really thinking, like, you could just dismiss it, or it's like, okay, I'm going to go check it out, and you navigate to there. So I started off by blocking it on my computer at work, because I didn't think it would be super appropriate for me to waste all that time. But then I also found that even though it was blocked on my computer, I would still get notifications on my phone, and I still had the application that had access to it. new notification, click, let's go check it out. And I found that I was doing a lot of that kind of transitioning my thinking away from things that I should be focusing my attention on over onto these things that, yeah, I'm supporting my friends, yeah, I'm talking to my friends, I'm being engaged, I'm being active with people, but it's not really something at that particular moment that I need to distract myself with, and then I end up distracting myself far longer than I need to, because, oh, well, notification's done, okay, let's just scroll through the feed a little bit. And so, yeah, there's that maladaptive side to that technology that, like I said, it's not bad all the time, and it's not without its benefits, but, you know, once you kind of catch yourself this doing this mindless scrolling, it's like, oh, man, I feel bad. Like, I just feel like I've wasted an opportunity.
Fair.
So.
So, that, when we talked about consumption. Mm-hmm. The other one was creation.
Yeah.
And you actually proposed a wasteful act of creation in the icebreaker. Your icebreaker answer, mm-hmm, arguably, is a thing that, at the very least, you regard, mm-hmm, as wasted time, mm-hmm, playing with electronics, learning that. But it is an act of creation. It's an, mm-hmm, act of making things.
Yeah, I think in my case, it would be tied to just things that don't directly relate to the obligations that I currently have. Mm-hmm. And that's why...
You ever worry that you just don't get any, you don't give yourself any downtime?
Well, I mean, I got the Fitbit the tail end of 2015, and I've discovered... I knew I didn't sleep a lot, but I thought I was only just barely missing 7 to 8 hours, but it tracks me per week. I'm sleeping on average about 5.5 hours a night.
Oh.
So I know in there's a lot of time that I'm just devoting to absolutely nothing.
Mm-hmm.
YouTube, you are the bane of my existence. I will spend 3 and 4 hours a night.
Please tell us again how in this YouTube video you are decrying.
Well, they could be listening to us on iTunes or anywhere else. I was about to say Stitcher, but I don't think we're on Stitcher.
On Stitcher.
Maybe that'll be a 2016 goal. But yeah, I do recognize the irony of a YouTube video, me talking about how YouTube is the bane of my existence. But I just find that I do have a lot of obligations, and we'll talk a little bit about this later, about being busy and whatnot. But I also do find that on a whim, I'll take on additional projects to make stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, I want to learn a little bit about electronics, and I was telling you about a project. I want to do one of those magic mirror electronics things. And if I ever make it, we'll talk about it, and I'll post some pictures of it or whatever, because it seems like a fun little intro how to make an electronics thing project. Mm-hmm. But from my point of view, my creation tends to be maladaptive when it's adding things to a pile without actually addressing or solving any of my additional obligations. But say Olivia, I mean, it's such a small thing for me, but I mean, you were in the show notes, or when we were making the show notes, you were talking about a much more interesting conception of this problem.
A much, much nerdier conception.
Well, it's nerdy, but...
My concern is telling stories in the wrong place. And it was a thing that I noticed I'd been doing recently. I play a lot of Skyrim. A lot. I think I'm at about 800 or 900 hours. And I've only been playing for like a year or two.
Oh, they're gonna say like a week.
No. There aren't.
There aren't that many hours.
That's
a week.
Impossible.
Are there, Jim? I found it. I found.
I found the time.
I found the singularity. I go back, Marty.
But oh dear. No, and it went from like playing the game normally to playing the game with mods. And I've talked about that a little bit. To playing the game. Where I have to tell a story in sandbox games, otherwise I just get lost. And mm-hmm. I don't know what to do, and I don't know what the hell's going on. I don't have any sort of way to focus on. If you have a game that gives me a to-do list, God, I'm such a sucker for it. But
do you always do optional quests? Like, every optional quest?
Not all of them, but a lot of them. Yeah. I'll go through phases where I'm like, I'm going to clean up my quest log.
Mm-hmm.
I have to go and murder some faces. Mm-hmm. But... No, and I'd gotten to the point where I was using the in-game character creation to, because there's a console command for it, to edit my character, to make them reflect my story.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd change their face paint or their scars or, you know, their age or their hair and things like that. Like Skyrim dress up is a very important part of my Skyrim experience. And then I realized that I could reimagine my character entirely as a different character and continue on with them. So I started reimagining them. I'm sufficiently good at Skyrim that it does not matter what my character's skills are. I can succeed in pretty much any archetype at this point. And I understand what resources I need to have to do that. But so I reimagined my character not just into another character, but 9 other characters, each of whom had their own story and their own residence. And I found ways to... I have a spreadsheet. And I found ways to, like, make them relate to each other and tell all these stories with them. And there was my Skyrim multiplicity. So I have since designed 3 additional multiplicities, each with different sort of background themes and different stories and things like that. And it was on my 4th. When I went... Oh, it's been a while since I worked on D&D stuff. I run 2 Dungeons & Dragons games. I write for Mad Art Lab. I make videos, ostensibly, not just with Huck, but on my own. Mm-hmm. I write music. I occasionally attempt to compete in poetry slams. And none of these things were things that I was doing, because I was sort of expending all my creative energy on Skyrim and also all of my time, because I can't just tell these stories in these spreadsheets. I create these setups so that I can act them in Skyrim, so that I can journey through that world as a person and inhabit them and make their decisions. And it was a very, very deep conception of that notion. I said it when we were doing the show notes, and that was about a week ago when we first bandied this around, and I'm telling stories in the wrong places. And since then, every time I go to do that, I'm like, am I telling stories in the right places right now? And I'm like, no, I've got D&D stuff I need to do. I've got articles to finish for Mad Art Lab. I've got videos to edit. And the result is I'm not playing as much Skyrim, and I'm getting vastly more done.
It's kind of funny how it's kind of like a philosophical reflection, and it's actually translated into something useful.
Yeah. I mean, it's a case of what is more important to me? Where do I want to tell stories? And the answer is without question, I always want to tell stories in spaces where I can share them. Mm-hmm. And that is one of the things that makes Skyrim fun and sort of cathartic is I can tell stories there. I don't have to share them. And, you know, no one is privy to what goes on in my Skyrim game unless I talk about it. I don't have an obligation to share them. Because sometimes it is hard. And it is hard to continually sort of create that much new content for people. But it is fun, and I enjoy it, but I forget that I enjoy it.
Can I make one suggestion if you continue to do your multiplicity? Can you,
please don't ask me to blog about my multiplicity.
No.
It's really fucking nerdy.
No, this one would be this one would be a little bit harsher.
Oh.
You should challenge yourself that anytime your character dies, their story ends and you don't go back.
Oh, honey.
Was it do you do that?
Yes.
Okay.
All my Skyrim runs for the past like 200 or 300 hours have been permadeath runs.
Oh, okay, never mind.
But I don't die in Skyrim.
Yeah.
I am very... I have put 800 hours into this game. I'm very good at it.
When I play games, I am definitely spray and pray, and I respawn a lot.
And some games are like that. Skyrim, yeah. Skyrim, my patience is rewarded. My smithing is excellent. My companions are well armed, and I do not die. Only one group of people die in Skyrim, and those are my enemies.
All right, well, then never mind. Forget that I, in that case, audience, how about you consider that if you ever run a multiplicity, why don't you ensure that
if you ever run a multiplicity, you might want to start a support group with me.
Yeah, if your characters die,
permadeath runs are really fun. And permadeath runs in multiplicities are sort of really interesting. And what do you do and how do your other characters mourn them? And like there's story again, it's there are stories to tell about the character who died.
Yeah.
Each of my multiplicities has someone who always goes unarmed. It was something I got into, I don't know, 300 or 400 hours ago. It was just periodically it is fun to play townsfolk. It is also super dangerous.
Yeah.
Because vampires show up, dragons show up. Better just skip town until that's done. Hope the guards take care of it. But it is an interesting thing. But it's also, and it's fun sometimes, but it definitely got out of control for a while when I was first doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was detracting from all the other places that I needed to be telling those stories and needed to be doing, like writing posts and creating things. Because I don't like going into a D&D game and improvising everything. I can.
Yeah.
And it's kind of fun in a different way, but it's occasionally good to have some kind of plan.
Yeah.
And the last topic we had written down was busyness is binging, and just that notion of you can be sort of, I mean, all of these are self-destructive ways of spending time, really. I mean, it isn't that binge watching, for example, is inherently bad. It is that for me, it is self-destructive.
Mm-hmm.
It makes me feel bad. It does not make me feel good after, you know, doing it for 18 hours. Skyrim, too. 2 hours, 3 hours of Skyrim, I'm a very happy man. 18 hours of Skyrim, I start going, oh my God, what am I doing with my life? And that isn't a good feeling. But there is such a thing as just fill your calendar with things.
Mm-hmm.
And the result is that you're so busy doing those things that you don't get any downtime. And that, like, that the busyness itself becomes self-destructive.
Mm-hmm.
I try not to use the word busy anymore when people ask me what I've been up to or how I'm doing. I think I mentioned this previously in another podcast, but it is just that if I cannot describe to you what I have been doing, it is not very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And if I am just being boring, I should just tell you that I'm being boring, which is what I tell people now. I'm like, what did you get up to last week? And I think about it, and I'm like, well, I mostly spent it sitting in a place playing video games and not really talking. And you know what? I was super boring last week. Ask me about a different week.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I am, in terms of my scheduling, I guess I am busy. Part of it is I work two jobs, like a full-time job, part-time job, volunteer experience. And you and I were kind of comparing our schedules and our obligations and whatnot. So I think you did win in that one. You are legitimately more busy.
I don't
busy
know
than
that
mine.
I win that. I don't know that that's winning, and I don't know what winning means in that context.
Yeah.
Especially because I don't work two jobs. I just edit all the podcasts.
You can tell. The jobs are starting to catch up with me and the lack of sleep, but my weekly schedule is fairly locked down in terms of, like, you know, so I work 9 to 5 basically, and then I work Wednesday, Friday, Saturday nights at the bar, and I don't really like to do anything between the end of one job and the start of the other one, just for the sake of sanity. And but then, you know, like Mondays are usually meeting up with a few friends or doing the podcasting stuff, and Tuesday is usually gym day, like going to the gym.
Every day is gym day.
Every day is gym day. But Tuesdays I usually go to the gym and do groceries. And then Thursdays is one of the few unrestricted days that I have that I sometimes catch up on other work. Or I have ethics board meetings scheduled for those days. And then Saturday and Sunday is I want to catch up on sleep, but I don't want to sleep in because, you know, I don't go to bed till 3, 4 in the morning. And so sleeping in until 10 feels terrible, even though I'm only sleeping 5 or 6 hours at that
point. Yeah, because you're working late at the bar.
Yeah, and so I have these limited hours on weekends where, like this weekend, I still hadn't hit the gym. I had to take the car in to get repaired, and had to go to the library to do some homework, and today I had to help move a stove.
You don't even know what you moved.
Yeah, that's the thing. So, I mean, in some sense, I am binging on busyness. I, too, try not to say I'm busy, but usually it's just, you know, how have you been? Oh, you know, I lots of work kind of deal. Because like, for me, the two jobs takes it, you know, because I'm working 48-plus hours a week. And I think I work, well, it's 35 hours at the one job and then minimum 12 hours at the other job usually. So it's like almost 48 hours a week, if not more, depending on the shifts. So that's just work, and that's a swing shift. Like, I'm splitting the work up in the day. I'm not doing, like, you know, 12-hour days unless I'm out of the house the entire time.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. In some sense, this feels qualitatively different than if the busy question before I started to engage, where I was just filling up my schedule with a bunch of to-dos. But... yeah, I think this one is just I schedule the calendar. It's fairly locked in, and I do what I can with it. Yeah, so that's what I do with busyness is binging, and I don't know if it's healthy or not. So
advise us on your unhealthy habits, but in the meantime, I'm going to send Huck away so he can take a nap.
Probably should take a nap.
Yeah.
Yeah, we don't really have anything insightful to say as this one because we haven't figured it out ourselves. But we are fully willing to admit that it's something worth thinking about.
Oh, yeah.
It's fairly maladaptive to be binging in this way, especially on busyness.
But no, we're going to sign off so I can go sleep. I'm Jim.
I'm Ryan.
And as I mentioned, we're signing off.
And don't stay busy. Just stay awesome.
I do want to dig through them all. For like a highlight podcast.
Yeah.
But given that we have, 40 plus hours of them, it is not a mission for one man.
So basically, Huck and Jim, X a thing, is now going to be...
Huck and Jim watch all the podcasts.
Eventually, they're like, no, we're quitting. This is so bad.
Yeah.
Why do people keep telling us this is good and encourage us to do this?
Mm-hmm.